Hello and welcome to the Galvanize and Restore podcast. I am your host, Jessica Concepcion. Very excited to be here with you in your car, in the gym, if you're walking at the park, if you're at the mall, wherever you are shopping, and whoever you are. I just want to invite you to leave a comment, to subscribe, leave me a review. Let other people know if you like this podcast, maybe they will too. By reading your comments, it helps people kind of get a feel of what's going on. I would appreciate it. I love it. And I love to actually break down the barrier between us and electronics. So write me a message. I'm at Gal Restore on Instagram. I am usually there mostly throughout the day. And if you write to me on there, I will get back to you. If you have a topic that you're interested in being covered on the podcast, whether it's diving into a specific issue about modern day slavery, just let me know. And I definitely would love to do some research and get to be able to share that, and also maybe get in professionals who are in the top, whether it's like a lawyer and things like that, who can probably give you more information about the issue, you know, whatever it is that you might be interested in, whatever piques your curiosity. I would love to be able to just share that and prepare an episode that you guys might and will enjoy. So don't be shy, connect with me, and let's go, let's jump right in. So today I'm gonna be talking about, why are teens driven into the sex industry? So one of the angles, one of the first things I thought about that I listed here was the biggest factor that is driving these children into the sex industry is the fact that people are willing to purchase sex. So we all know the business and supply model, right? Usually when there's a high demand for something, there needs to be high supply. So if there was no demand for these services, for this pleasure, for this illicit activity, then there wouldn't be anyone able to sell someone, you know. So the fact of the matter is that what's really pushing this industry forward is the fact that people are willing to purchase sex. Today we're going to be talking about the demand for sex trafficking and the demand for sex. So I have two resources in front of me. I'm on the website ndsexualexploitation.org. So this is the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. So these people do tons of research, and their main reason for existing is to end the sex trade in America and hopefully provide solutions to all the things that we're seeing and the experience, the horrible experiences that are happening to people all around the world when it comes to sex trafficking. We really do need to cater to talking about the changing the hearts of men. You know, the majority of sex buyers are men. And today we're just going to be listing some statistics on that as well. So on their website, I'm just reading one of the articles. And one of the things that they say here is the failure to combat sex buying guarantees not only the survival of sex trafficking, but also the creation of future generations of victims. Future generations of victims. There has to be a lot more education on making sure people understand what trafficking looks like, and that there's a series of choices that gets them into that situation. And because they, for example, willingly went to the bar that night and met this person, or they willingly got into the car, but it seems like they're willingly doing it, but they're being threatened to do it. So there's like this whole wave of guilt that people are experiencing because they're like, okay, I got myself into this situation. Like, how am I going to get myself out? But they don't realize that they're being trafficked. Most of the time, survivors have to be told that they are trafficked because it takes some time to realize that they were a victim of a crime and that they're not the ones just committing the crime. Because you guys know, prostitution is illegal. And normally what these what survivors are hearing when they're being trafficked by their pimps is, who's going to want you now that you've done this? And, oh, I have pictures of what you did yesterday. If you go to anyone, I'm gonna spread your pictures around to your school and all your friends and your family. And everyone's going to know who you really are. And you're dirty. You're nothing. No one's going to love you the way I love you. They're hearing all these things from their traffickers. And, you know, we're emotional, you know, like, as people, unless you're born like a psychopath and you have no emotions, or if you're you're just born with like no empathy, like, we all have our needs, you know, like, we want to be loved, we want to be cared for, we want to be valued, we want to be in a community that accepts us. And, you know, all these threats of blackmail and harassment really do hold people prison in their minds. You know, they're like, man, like, he's right. Like, now that I've done this, you know, what are people going to say? And when I say I've done this, like, let's say they were coerced into like selling sex for money or for a phone or for food or whatever. That idea was planted into them, and they didn't just get accidentally into that position. They were coerced. They were trained on, you know, like, there were steps, and they don't even realize, you know, that they're falling into this manipulation. So we can go all into that, but got it a little sidetracked. We're gonna return to the topic of the day, which is the sex buying. And so one of the things here is just saying a key factor in preventing sex trafficking and other forms of sexual exploitation is often neglected or forgotten altogether, which is the consumer demand for paid sex, whether it's in person, virtual, or digital, or film photography formats. So the concepts of supply and demand are fundamental building blocks in commercial economics. Supply represents any particular product that markets offer, and demand refers to the desire for those products among potential buyers. When these concepts are applied to forms of sexual exploitation, such as prostitution, pornography, or sex trafficking, the supply, quote unquote, refers to those who are bought and sold for in-person sex, or whose sexually explicit images are commodified and/or bartered. This objectifies and diminishes the humanity of those being supplied, predominantly women and children, but also people of any gender, by rendering human beings into public sexual commodities. I just want to say that again. Like, this is what is happening online right now. People are buying images of other people and basically sexualizing them as commodities. And I'm gonna say, you know, like, God made us beautiful, man and male and female. Like, we are made, we look great, you know, most of us, right? We all have that, you know, sex appeal. We're attractive, and, you know, we are meant to have that beauty, but it's not meant to be distorted and brought down to, like, basically what the porn industry does. You know, the porn industry really dehumanizes what's supposed to be intimate and beautiful. So, you know, these addictions to pornography or to, you know, these images or videos, it really cultivates a culture where we turn people's bodies into things that can be bought. Ugh, it just sounds so horrifying. I'm literally sitting here all like cozied up and in my like sweater and yoga pants and just sitting here like all warm. And I'm thinking about, you know, the amount of violence that is mainly portrayed in pornography, and the nasty exposure that little kids are going through, and the disturbing, you know, like nudity and shame that's being brought upon their bodies, and that's what's happening, you know, like they're the traffickers are meeting the demand of people who want to see this happen, and it's so disturbing. I'm, you know, my, like, I'm feeling just the like in my cozy state right now, it's just like making me more and more just, it's disrupting, like, how can this be, you know, how can, you know, I feel comfortable, I feel safe, I feel nice, and there's people who aren't feeling like that right now, you know, there's people out there, even it, probably in your neighborhood, you know, I want to encourage you, like, look up your county, look up your city, type in sex trafficking in X city, or, you know, in whichever, and figure out, like, what's the numbers, like, what's happening in your community, because, as you know, we're living our life, like, there's someone's childhood being stolen right now. And when I say stolen, I just mean the innocence of childhood, the innocence of, you know, running around free, not feeling shame, not feeling compromised or impure and taken advantage of. Instead, you know, kids, you know, the kids who are growing, there are kids just growing up, you know, in loving communities and, you know, filled with opportunities and all these things. And yet, that one of their classmates may not have the same experience. So it's really interesting to think about this in the context that the reason why they're not experiencing that, the kids and the teenagers and the women and the men who are being trafficked, the reason they're not experiencing this freedom that God gives us is because of the demand for someone to see their bodies. Like, when we think about that, it sounds crazy, right? Like, when you really think about what's happening, it's disturbing. You know, it should disturb us to the point where we speak out against these things, and we encourage people to not engage in these activities, or to not crave this. And I know some people might be thinking, hey, like, well, you know, the pornography industry existed for a long time, and not everyone who's in porn is being trafficked. Some people willingly do it, and that's a whole nother topic. But the fact is that because of the porn industry, it encourages this lifestyle of viewing explicit material for pleasure and for entertainment, and it creates, like, it fuels the fire to the addiction, to the sexual tendencies that are happening right now. And it's something to really understand, you know, like, we need to understand, like, why are people looking at this stuff, and just not even, like, making this, like, a funny joke or, like, making it awkward or anything, but there's a lot of research in regards to pornography and the addiction, what it does to your brain, and all these things, anxiety, and what it really does to your hormone. Like, there's so much research. And I want to just give a shout out to Fight the New Drug, Alexia actually talked about it in our Alexa actually talked about it in our interview, and she spoke about how pornography is such a big issue, and she brought up Fight the New Drug, which is an organization that focuses on pornography and why it's bad for society, why it's such an issue. And so that all this goes to fueling the demand, because basically someone finds out, oh, you know, someone can pay me for viewing this child in my life. Like, I can put them on the internet and someone's going to pay me money, you know? And so, like, the root of all trafficking, it all comes down to the end goal, which is to get income. And so the thing that happens is that there are people taking opportunities to exploit those around them for their benefit of gaining that check, you know, that money, that Venmo or that PayPal. Someone is being paid to see and do things with people. So we really need to focus on changing the hearts of man, understanding, you know, like, there's these things called John schools, where people kind of, once they're, let's say someone goes to buy sex and the police, you know, intervene and catch that person. Some counties have it where they have to serve like a mandatory fault, like go to the school, and normally it's called like a John school. And in the John school, they're being taught about what it means. Like, they kind of break down different things in regards to like human trafficking, what it you know, the human soul, like what is it that you're really searching for. And they kind of start just laying a foundation of like humanizing the women that they're trying to buy. So I think that's one way that some counties are counteracting, you know, like this demand. And then, you know, there's obviously a potential for bringing punishment onto it as well, like paying a fine, spending time in jail, things like that. Especially, I believe, like if you're engaged with a minor and you know this person is obviously a minor, then, you know, that's those people are being arrested, you know, because they're pedophiles. So they're literally targeting children and willing to pay for them. And, you know, and sometimes a lot of these cases, like, they're driving miles and miles to go harm this child, you know. And I know this is a really heavy conversation, so I just want to encourage you to step away from the podcast if you need to. Get some tea, you know, get some green tea or some coffee. Go on a walk. Try to find different ways to comfort yourself on this hard topic, because child abuse is not something that is easy to swallow. It's something that is, you know, horrifying, and sometimes it could be very personal, you know, if someone you know or if you yourself have experienced this, then it can, you know, bring back memories or bring back, you know. And I think when we talk about this, like, I just want to share that God is real, you know, like we have hope in Christ to renew anything of the past, any experience. I just want to pour hope into that, because the Bible really talks about redeeming times and how God can take something that happened and really help someone heal through it. And if you haven't read the Word, I just want to encourage you to, you know, pick up the Bible and really be encouraged. That's where I find my hope. I think even in researching, you know, this topic and just learning about what's happening, it can be, oh my God, it's very shocking. It can turn your mind into kind of like you start, at least for me personally, I'm the type of person that I want to do something about what I'm seeing, you know, or what I'm hearing about. Like, I want to take an action, but I think in order to take an action, like, you always have to kind of understand the issue. And for me, it really, when I hear people's stories or, you know, like, fresh information, it's overwhelming, because I always go back to the fact that, like, I still can't believe, like, this is happening. You know what I mean? Because it's so bizarre. It's almost like, you know, we're living in a world where it's like you can turn on Netflix and watch your favorite show, like comedy show. You're laughing for like 2 or 3 hours. Or if you watch like, I know that people like watching like crime series or like mystery thrillers and things like that. Like, we live in this beautiful country, like this nation. And when I say beautiful, I just mean like nature. Oh my gosh. Like, if you've been out into the mountains or, you know, near natural rivers or the beaches, or it's just such a gorgeous, I'm like having flashbacks of one vacation. So we just live in this weird dichotomy, right? This weird thing happening where it's like you can experience so much beauty, so many things to have fun and relax, and then at the same time then you run into like this information and you're like, what? You're like, huh? You know, it just kind of like it really messes you up in a good way, right? You should be able, you know, you should be horrified with all this information, but I always come down to like, how can this be? And that's why I just want to encourage you when it comes to being encouraged in this, is that there is hope. You know, like, God is here for us, and I'm a believer, so I believe that we can have a relationship with Jesus. And what that means is that we're not alone. You know, we're not fighting this human trafficking issue by ourselves. You know, like, first of all, like, these people are God's creation. You know what I mean? Like, he wants us to do something about this. He wants us to be able to understand the issue and also be prepared, you know, to do something, whether it's to donate or to foster a child, to, you know, foster kids. There's a lot of foster kids that need homes, you know, and fostering children is a huge thing. You know, they are the most, a lot of them are most vulnerable to being trafficked. And especially because of their past experiences, most of the children who are in the foster care system have experienced some level of abuse. That's why they have been taken from their home in the first place. So, you know, if God is calling you to open your home, to become a foster parent, that's one way to do it. But yeah, you know, there's hope. We're not alone in this fight, but it is a fight. It is something that's hard. And so I just want to encourage you to be encouraged and to pump up your faith with reading the word and understanding like what we should do about when we see injustice happening. So I'm gonna jump back into the End Sexual Exploitation website, endsexualexploitation.org. So how do we, so in sexual exploitation demand, in contrast, so those who make up the demand are the individuals with the desire and means to purchase people to use for sex. Again, whether in person, virtual, or digital, or film photography formats. As the driving force fueling the market for paid sex, these quote-unquote buyers represent the consumer-level demand. Without them making the decision to buy sex acts, sexual exploitation would end. No buyers, no business. Those who comprise the demand are overwhelmingly male. So sex trafficking exists because the male demand for people to buy for sexual use outstrips the supply of those available for purchase. Since few people wish to be bought in exchange of sex for money, sex traffickers, basically distributors of people used for prostitution and motivated by profit, step in to provide the supply. In order to secure people to sell in the prostitution marketplace, pimps engage in recruitment, transportation, harboring, provisioning, and obtaining and utilize means of force, fraud, and coercion. Thus, pimps are, by definition, sex traffickers, and any pimp-controlled person, whether a minor or an adult, is a victim of sex trafficking. So men who solicit and buy people for sex are often referred as customers, quote-unquote, or clients. These terms normalize obscure the harm of their behavior. The term Johns is also a common term used to refer to those who purchase sex. It too is problematic for its anonymizing effect, as well as the way in which it normalizes the behavior by suggesting that men purchase people for sex is as common as the name John. So as an alternative, we should start using sex buyers because it more accurately describes the activity in which these individuals engage. However, y'all, it has been argued that sex buyers are not actually purchasing sex, since sex connotes an intimate, mutually desired, and mutually pleasurable sexual exchange. The quote-unquote sex purchase in prostitution is certainly not intimate. It is an escape from intimacy, nor is it mutually desired. If it was, payment would not be necessary, and it hinges entirely on the sexual pleasure of the buyer, thus making it inherently impossible to engage in a healthy paid sex act. Moreover, terms like sex buyer, by placing emphasis on sexual activity, obscure the humanity of those on whom buyers enact and enforce their sexual demands. Unfortunately, we're not aware of alternative phrasing that adequately encompasses the behavior results harms that the term sex buyers attempts to describe. So in spite of its shortcoming, we use the term sex buyers. So that's what the National Center of Sexual Exploitation has explained themselves in regards to why they use sex buyers instead of the customers or clients. So I really want to just dive into more of like the statistics. Okay, so in the United States, about 16% of men in the U.S. have paid for sex. The average age the majority of people who purchase sex are mainly above 30 years old. And that just has to do, I think, with the opportunities, right? I think if you're younger, you're usually like in the dating pool and you might be, you know, engaging in that when you're younger. And I guess when you're a little bit older, you know, because of age and everything, as I read another time, because of age, you know, you're kind of limited to your options. Or I mean, you know, maybe you don't got it as you did when you were 20, you know, but basically as an older male, I guess if you know, have let yourself go and you just kind of your options are more limited, and so it's easier mainly for people to just go ahead and purchase what they want. And so it's not humane, guys. So I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, statistics have found that the majority of people who do buy sex that are men are usually 30 and older. A study back in 2012, the average age they found of people who purchased sex, it was 49. The average income of those who were practicing sex was like $141,000. A lot of them are married. In this study, it was like 66% were married. 41% had graduate degrees, 38% had college degrees, 18 had some kind of college, and then 2.9 completed high school or a GED. And then the first average age for the first contact with a prostitute or with a sex trafficking victim, it's stated as about 32 being the average. About 94% met the person in a hotel or a hostel. So that's what they actually went out of their way to engage in sex buying. Here they found that 45% had been looking for paid sex online for over 5 years. 62% of respondents indicated that they wanted to interact with someone who acted like a girlfriend and not like a prostitute. So they don't want to feel shame for what they're doing, right? They want to normalize it, like if it is normal or something, to buy a person and to make it seem like, you know, paying for sex is normal. And right now, guys, we have to decide that it's not normal. Yeah, change your ways. I know it's not easy. I think, some people are addicted to sex, so they go out and do these things. But I think we really do need to focus on normalizing, like, the change is possible and that change has to happen, because really tackling the willingness to buy is really gonna change this for a lot of people out there. So I'm hoping to dive a little bit deeper into this conversation on another day, and we can dive into the psychology behind those who purchase sex and why it happens and how it happens. Like, how do you end up in your life in that moment of purchasing another human being to perform sexual acts on your body? How does that happen? And, you know, and I know some people are probably like, hey girl, you know, it's, you know, you gotta meet the needs or, you know, whatever it is. And I just feel like, you know, from my understanding, you know, that person is, there's a lot going on there. So I kind of want to explore that a little bit more, and we'll get back to that conversation another time. So I know this episode was kind of everywhere, but I hope you got the gist of it, that basically demand is the issue, and that is why children, teenagers are being placed in places they should not be, like hotels, motels, mansions, private homes, cars. They're being taken to places they should not be, and you guys, we have to stay informed, know that prevention is possible, hashtag prevention possible. We can do so much more, but I also think that it does start in prayer, you know, for those in my faith community. Prayer really does bring about encouragement. It helps us to take our hands off of the solution sometimes. Like, we have to, like, take a step back and understand that we're not going to figure everything out, and that it's okay. You know, we don't have to know everything to make a difference. So I think that's important to say, because it just means that when you are given the opportunity to make a difference, that hopefully you take it, and you don't have to feel perfect within that opportunity. You can just go ahead and do it with God's grace and not feel like, you know, you're not good enough to help, or you're not good enough to be that foster parent. You know, you can be encouraged that none of us, you know, like, in the grand scheme of it, we, like, as the Bible says, like, you know, we've all fallen short of the glory of God, which means basically, like, we all have the opportunity to be used by God to do good things and to do great things for him. But we have to acknowledge that it's not in our own strength, but it's the strength that he gives us. And if you're not a believer, I know that sounds crazy. You're like, huh? You know, what does that even mean? So hopefully I can break that down in another episode of what does it mean to run this race with God by our side? What does it mean to be comforted by him? And I think a part of it is that it just means that we have freedom to cry about this issue. We have freedom to be angry. We have freedom. And he allows the issue to not become, to wait on us. You know what I mean? Like, to not, we're not meant to carry like secondary trauma. You know, there's a literal term for it. When you're overwhelmed by someone else's trauma, it's like, called secondary trauma. You know, you're overwhelmed by what you're listening to and hearing, and that's why in this fight we need Jesus. We need the Lord to help us to not be weighed down and to be filled with hope. It's not just about emotions, but it's about connecting with the God of the universe so that he can provide his supernatural wisdom and power and encouragement into our lives every single day. You know, even if it's not about human trafficking, it could just be about your work, your full-time job, you know, or it could be about your children, your friendships, your relationship, your marriage, anything. You know, he's there for us. And so just be encouraged with that he sees you, he knows where you are, he knows where you are in life, he knows that that if you're listening to this, that you're really, you know, probably interested in really doing something and about this. And I just want to encourage you, like, it starts with prayer, to ask him, like, what have you called me to do, you know, with my time? And what you call me to do on this earth, you know, and how can I help people who are being trafficked, you know? So I just want to encourage you with that. And it's so funny. I don't even know how to end today's podcast. It's so funny. I haven't actually done a real podcast episode in so long, just solo, because I feel like it's just been like interviews for so long. So it's great to be back. This is the first episode that kind of has dived into a little bit of, you know, the demand and you know, the sadness that is the child exploitation and everything. And so it's nice to be able to do this. And I just want to ask, thank you for your prayers, thank you for your support. Leave me a comment and let me know what you think about, you know, let me know what you want to hear about in the next year. You know, this whole year we have ahead of us. So have a great rest of your night or day, wherever you're listening. And go get a cup of coffee or tea or something to relax, because you deserve it. All right. Peace out.